purpose of this meeting is to discuss a review of several county laws related to environmental issues. And we are doing this jointly because the Environment Committee is interested in the environmental laws of this county. And we are joined by Kelly Belnick, a third-year student. She started her work here as an intern as a second-year student, and now she's a third-year student. And she has reviewed three county laws, one dealing with pesticide reduction, one dealing with posting of signs with respect to hazardous waste, and one relating to critical environmental areas. I think we'll and we're joined by the chair of the Pesticide Committee.
Roberta Wiernick.
Roberta Wiernick.
Also a founding member of the Septic Subcommittee.
Right. That's where I know you. We'll start by with the pesticide reduction law. We're also joined by our acting director of consumer affairs, John Gaccio, because this, one of these laws is falling under his jurisdiction. Notification, the signage law. So let's start with pesticide reduction, and Kelly, maybe you can give us an overview of your review of the law.
Sure, thank you, Chairman Nona. Well, one of the questions when we received these laws, as you know, was to look over them and look for any ambiguities, to see how the law was working in action, and to identify any areas for improvement, concern, or things that the board should revisit in the next year or so. So with the pesticide reduction law, just to walk you through a quick overview, its big thing that it does is it attempts to have the county properties move away from toxic pesticides use and move towards an integrated pest management strategy. The big way that the law attempts to achieve this is through the adoption of the Pesticide Management Committee, of which we have the chair with us today, which is a volunteer committee, and they, after the passage of this law, work to promulgate rules, regulations, to identify how we can move away on county properties from toxic pesticide use. So the big thing, and this, a lot of my information does come from Chris Crane, who took a lot of time to speak with the chair of the Pesticide Committee, as well as the contractor to the Pesticide Committee, Kevin Hurley. But what resulted after this law was passed with the efforts of the Pesticide Management Committee was a series of guidelines that were to be adopted on county properties with in terms of pesticide management use. And they were guidelines, and I emphasize that because they were not regulations in that sense. The committee, as a volunteer committee, does continue to meet about 8 to 10 times a year, and please correct me if I speak out of turn at all.
It's about every month.
Okay.
It's unusual we miss 2 months in a row, except maybe December.
Right, because, yes,
and usually there are extra meetings thrown in.
Okay. So, in addition to the rules and regulations, one of the things that is certainly an area that the legislators might want to take a look at is if you look through the laws, one of the things that it does is it has sunset clauses in terms of when certain toxic pesticides will no longer be used by the county. And one of the things is that these dates are significantly past. Most, I think the latest one was 2002. And basically it says with rare exception that there would be an integrated pest management strategy in place and that we would not be using toxic pesticides any longer. So one of the things that we want to visit is with all the progress that the committee has made, these sunset provisions probably don't add a great deal to the law at this point in terms of the fact that...
And just let me interrupt you, Section Kelly. You're talking about Section 690.05, Subdivisions 1, 2, and 3.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chairman. So, yes, 690.05.
Page 6 of the law.
Right. So that's one of the that was one of the first things that came up with these sunset provisions. And as you can see, just sort of taking a quick glance at page 6, is that all of these were really meant to be in effect by the end of 2002. And from the looks of it, while great education and strides have been made to better educate the commissioners on county properties using pesticides, we have not achieved these goals. We've certainly created a lot of awareness about these goals.
So when you say we haven't achieved the goals, I mean we're still using toxicity category 1.
Or I wouldn't say that we're not still using category 1. We haven't completely wiped them out from, not category 1 we haven't, but...
Okay.
Roberta, did you want to add that?
Yeah, please, yeah.
We rarely use Category 2. When it requires an exception application, which is carefully reviewed,
right,
for a one-time site-specific use only. It's very limited.
Okay, and what about 3? No person shall apply any pesticide on the county property except as provided for Section 690.06 and 07.
Pretty same there. You see, it gets less and less toxic as you go down. Yeah.
So, is there a suggestion that we just eliminate those dates? Or do we just don't really need the date?
Well, exactly. It seemed like added verbiage to the way the law was written that really. You don't need to bind us that way, and achievements, to Roberta's point, are being made.
Sorry.
No problem. Thank you. The biggest thing that has happened to the Pesticide Management Committee since its inception after the passage of this law is in the last year they were able to contract Kevin Hurley to work with them in terms of developing the database that this law requires. This law asks for the development by the Pesticide Management Committee of an internal database that will be accessible to the committee, those applying and using pesticides. And so under Mr. Hurley's contract, he has taken great strides to improve the accessibility of that database.
Yeah, correction. We worked for years on that database. We were not given the financial resources we needed for data entry. The committee members, particularly Dr. Gangloff Kaufman, spent many, many hours of her own time unraveling what one database person put in there erroneously, hours and hours. He just came in and straightened up and got it on the right track after 2 or 3 years of work by the committee.
By the way, I think Kevin Hurley's on the phone, right, Kevin?
Yeah,
he's joined us by telephone. Okay, thank
you.
Hi,
Kevin.
Hi. I can hear part of what Roberta is saying.
Move it down, yeah. We talked about your cleaning up the database.
Okay, yeah, I got that, yep.
Okay.
And just to make clear, I certainly did not mean to detract from any of the efforts of the Pesticide Management Committee, which have been significant, merely pointing out that what Mr. Hurley has been able to do as a contractor to the committee is reinforce their efforts in a substantial way. So in terms of compliance, my understanding of it, or what we received back, is that to what Roberta said, is that exception applications do come in and they review any exceptions to the integrated pest management strategy that the committee would like to, that the commissioners are attempting to do. That one of the things that they will do is if they will write a letter explaining what is going on in terms of pesticide use not consistent with the guidelines they have developed. And I mean, one of the things is that while the PMC is extremely effective in their education that they're getting out there, one of the things that did come up when we were looking at the law is how able are we to enforce the use of less harmful pesticides the way the law is currently written. It doesn't have strong enforcement provisions as it is. Maybe we want to keep that way where it's a nice where it's a meaningful conversation that takes place. Or maybe that's something to revisit if we feel that the objectives are not being met. But from my understanding, the objectives of using less toxic pesticides seems to be becoming more prevalent on county properties, and more education is being done to affect that goal. Is there something you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, ask both Robert and Roberta Kevin and Roberta to comment on that.
I think Kevin can address this more accurately. First of all, as I said, because we have not had the database up and running, it's difficult to get a baseline and compare where we have come from and where we are. All we know is, you know, by reviewing the annual reports, looking at what they're using this year versus last year, recommending what we think are safer, less toxic things from year to year. But because we do now have some baselines with the database, Kevin, perhaps you could address the more recent progress on that. Kevin,
can you hear?
Can you hear me?
You know, it's unfortunate. Is it possible that you turn your head one way when you're talking? Because I get half of what you say, but not the other half.
Kevin, I was saying that you would have the... they were asking about progress,
Kelly,
had said that we were using more toxic products, and that's not my understanding at all. But you would have... the latest information based on the database.
I don't think that's what Kelly was saying.
No, that wasn't what I was saying at all. I'm sorry if that's your understanding of it. What I was suggesting was that the way the enforcement procedures currently work is that when somebody has an application for an exception to the norm, an mm-hmm. exception to the IPM strategies, they come before the PMC mm-hmm. to discuss it with you. Mm-hmm. But because of the way the law is currently written, to enforce it in a more substantial way than the current conversations you're having isn't really possible. And so we might want to look at how we can make stronger enforcement provisions so that there are more incentives to not use toxic methods in any way and really focus on supporting and strengthening the IPM strategies.
Well, that's yes and no. Oftentimes there isn't a choice. You know, if you want to wipe out an entire green on a golf course, there isn't a better choice. And by the way, most of the pesticides are used on the golf courses. And a lot of that is structural, the way they were designed. They're old golf courses with old soils, etc. So it's not a one-size-fits-all in terms of solutions. So what we try to do is when we get the annual plans in and we look at what they're trying to use, we always make sure it's the least toxic available. We have Mr. Hurley, who's a certified entomologist, very experienced. We have Dr. Jody Gangloff-Kaufman, who's an entomologist on the state IPM committee. We have a member of Cornell Cooperative Extension. We have a lot of experience on this committee, so they look into these products. We do our homework. We do the research to make sure that, as far as we can ascertain, it is the least toxic way to go, short of, as I said, not using anything or using something innocuous and having irreparable harm and damage, which is what the law says we cannot do if there is irreparable harm and damage.
Chris, you had a comment?
Yeah, in your packets, I included the golf course pesticide management annual plan, and I stapled to the back of it one or two of the exception applications that the committee would review. And so that's this. It says pesticide management plan 2010 in your packets.
And the last page is exception application.
So, yeah. And Robert, I don't know if you have a copy. Here it is. So those are two exception applications. There were several that were reviewed. I only pulled out two of them mm-hmm. for those particular instances.
Right.
I don't know if you heard that, Kevin.
Hey, I have to tell you guys, I'm getting at best one-third of what you're saying.
Okay, I'll try to put you on the other phone.
I didn't want to interrupt you. So I knew you were talking, but I couldn't hear you.
Chris, let's try and get the other phone.
Yeah. But to Kelly's point, there have been incidents where we have recommended for years, strongly recommended that certain things be done, like closing the golf courses an hour a week for cultural practice and maintenance, which is huge in terms of controlling these things and making healthy turf. Things like hand weeding, which got overridden by the county executive because it looks pretty to have whatever. They had to spray the weed killer instead of sending people in there to hand weed. And I'm just talking about in front of the clubhouse, you know, stuff like that. So it gets very frustrating.
All right, well to that point, you know, she was talking about what can we do to essentially strengthen the law to give you more teeth, and now you're sort of saying the same thing.
Exactly.
So are there items that either one of you would recommend that would give your committee and give Kevin more teeth to better adequately protect the county and its facilities from harmful chemicals?
One thing that, like I said, is that this law, as it's written, actually does give the Pesticide Management Committee the ability to not only pass guidelines, but to pass rules and regulations with certain consequences attached to them. The Pesticide Committee
and the
committee adopted guidelines, which guidelines, you know, are just that. They're guidelines.
Where's the provision for rules?
Let me just take a moment. Maybe Roberta can speak to some ideas she has while I find it.
Yep.
Hey, Kevin, you there?
Yes, I am, and so far I'm hearing Kelly loud and clear.
Okay.
Good. Right. Oh, yes. If you look at the bottom of page 2 into 3, Chairman, it says, a pest management committee shall be appointed by the County Board of Legislatures to develop and implement pest-managed policies, rules, and regulations.
Yeah, but in the next section that said that contains the authorization,
mm-hmm.
it simply provides for paragraph 3, procedures and guidelines, not regulations are stronger than
right.
procedures and guidelines. but I don't see anything that actually confers upon them the ability to issue regulations, and that may be a flaw in the way this law is written.
And I mean, and I guess that may be an ambiguity that was sort of perceived here.
In 0.03, the section describing the committee, the first provision says it shall be appointed to develop and implement pest management policies.
That's not enough.
Okay.
Then be authorized.
Yeah, I agree. That's all it says.
Yeah.
So between point one and point three, we sort of lose some of that thunder, I guess, is the point. And what has happened is the Pesticide Management Committee has done exactly what they were charged with, but does it, you know, what are those enforcement?
Right.
Or, and again, it's something worth looking at. Maybe it's working just fine. The work that they're doing is affecting the goal of the statute. But again, if there's not accountability, true accountability on the other end, rather than a stern talking to, are you really getting the most from your efforts?
Well, that leads to the question. Roberta and Kevin, do you want the ability, do you want to issue regulations? One. Two, you know, do you feel you have the resources to develop the regulations? And three, if we have regulations, what would the penalty be? Because we're talking about county departments. I mean,
yeah,
we're going to
fine
penalize
each other.
County.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
That's exactly the conversation.
John, we're fining you.
That's exactly the conversation we had in 1995 when this law was being, but just before it was being passed. How are you going to enforce all this? Mm. And after much debate and consternation, it came down to exactly your point, John, that what are you going to do? Have the county find its own commissioners? But San Francisco has a very effective way of doing this. Each department has to put in money to support this bill. And this, for example, in our instance, it would be primarily the pest management coordinator. So they have some skin in the game. And in a way, it's not enforcement, but in a way, it's
right.
Right. So rather than the Board of Legislators funding it, everyone funds a piece of the pie.
Right. So there are different ways of enforcing it, if you will, or getting a commitment, or getting, you know, some kind of engagement or involvement where they're not out there and we're over here. And that has been an ongoing problem. If you've read any of our annual reports, it's very apparent.
Yeah. We provided the most recent annual report.
2010, it just came out, right?
That would be Kevin's report.
Yeah.
Keep
going, Kelly.
Sure.
You're on a roll.
No problem. So, like I said, the most recent addition to this law's efforts and the work of the PMC is that of adding Kevin Hurley in with his contract to add oversight, education, and his years of experience to get him out in the field to visit the golf courses, to visit the sites where pesticide applications are occurring, and be a true liaison between what the county departments are doing and the work of the PMC. And I believe Chris has attached a copy of his report or write-up?
That's what
he just referenced. So you have a copy of what he has done this year. And like I said, I think since his appointment or awarding him the contract, one of the things that you can see is that some of the areas that maybe weren't receiving the attention they needed because it is an all-volunteer committee are now receiving more attention than they have in the past, and we're identifying more, or the PMC is being able to identify more of the areas that maybe should be revisited, how the law is working, how it can work better. So it's sort of a time will tell scenario in that capacity.
And just want to say for the record that last year, Kevin came into the Committee on Environment and Energy and gave a great PowerPoint on his activities.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody by legislative burden? Both committees?
No, he's just on legislation.
Legislation committee.
And also to the point of enforcement, I think the fact that when you have a contractor like Mr. Hurley who's out there visiting the sites, that, to Roberta's point, is another form of enforceability. It has someone out there so that you know someone is paying attention. It's not just a willy-nilly or something on paper. There's someone who is following up on what the substance of the law is. So I think that's an important point to make as we have this issue of enforceability on the table.
And if I may just interject here, I don't think it's so much a matter of enforcement. I like to call it compliance.
Yeah. Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And a lot of that is just, you know, coming together in a meeting of the minds, understanding, timeliness, and just working together. It's really more about compliance than enforcement. you know, we really need to engage the counties, the personnel more, just as Kevin has been doing this year. This is what we've been screaming for years, and it's working beautifully. It really
the
is.
The problem you had, I think, is you were a citizens committee that wasn't being paid anything. You really needed somebody who was, you know, a professional consultant who was at the time and was being paid to do so to go out in
exactly.
the field.
Exactly.
But what other than Parks and Recreation, what other departments do you have to really involve in this issue?
Public Works maintains all the structural stuff.
Yeah. And how about environmental facilities?
Occasionally. Mm-hmm. And Department of Health, you know, does the spraying for the West Nile virus, and right. you know, if there's an emergency or something like that, minimal there.
We have.
Sometimes there'll be a pilot project mm-hmm. in the planning department. They'll need approval, but primarily parks mm-hmm. And more secondarily Public Works.
There's going to be a new federal water permit coming down. It's Clean Water Act permit for pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. It's going to be administered through DEC, dealing with pesticides administered near gullies, right-of-ways to water. That would mean culverts and catch basins like we do for West Nile. So we're looking into that on the Environment Committee. Perhaps we can have a joint session when Chris has more information from them on that.
Absolutely.
But if I can get back to your point, Mr. Chair, that the question you asked a little while ago to both of you is what, if anything, would you contemplate doing now to strengthen this? Or, you know, since Kevin's just been on for a year, do we want to give it another year and then we all reconvene and say, okay, now we have 2 years worth of data. People are used to working with Kevin for a year. Is compliance up? You know, I guess I would start with you, Roberta, and then.
Well, I'm sure Kelly's been working on this quite diligently in terms of the, you know, phrasing and redundancy and et cetera. And, you know, that may all be housekeeping stuff, and that's great. I'm all in favor of that. If you want to know how I would change the law,
yeah.
I would make it a requirement that the county have a pest management coordinator in the law so that it couldn't be at the whim of the budget or the whim of what's popular now. I mean, if you're taking pesticide reduction seriously, you have to have a professional on site, and he's just part-time, by the way, part-time. And it's made a huge difference. We've been able to coordinate, educate, upgrade, got the database going, all in a very short year. My one, if you don't do anything else, do that.
And the law doesn't require that at this point?
No.
No, pretty much up till the point where we appropriated money. It was just part of the budget discussion each year.
That was the $40,000, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a case, I believe a case was made years ago for the original appropriation, which was in excess of 40, I forget what it had come in.
That was for a full-time.
And it was a full-time position. The legislature had decided many years ago that this was essential, that we be involved with this. And yet, there was a key person in management and supervision and administration that was always missing. And it was because we didn't have the will to come to this table and put it in. And through the efforts of Roberta and the committee and several legislators, we finally were able to, you know, put in an appropriation that would at least allow a part-timer. However, that did not even come close to solving the problem because it was very difficult to get someone who would agree to come in to do the job on that basis. I mean, it was near impossible. That appropriation sat there unspent for a long, long time. And so we're lucky. I mean, Kevin is in place now, but should Kevin go, it could very well be that we're back in the same position again. So Roberta's point is well taken. So far, it's the legislature that needs to decide how serious it's going to be about all of this and whether or not it's going to be committed in every way, shape, and form, and part of that commitment is an appropriation for adequate administration for the function.
Kelly, do you have anything else?
I really think all has been said, and I think to Legislator Harcum's point, just to point it out, is that with this law was infused with the addition of Mr. Hurley this year, and the efforts of the PMC were also infused. And so I think it is worthwhile to at least take another look this time next year and see what's come out of it and really ask Mr. Hurley to pay attention to how are we doing with compliance, how are we doing with lessening the toxicity of the pesticides we're using, and revisit and make sure that we're doing what the law intended us to do.
So I think we're headed to the consensus that we should have a provision for a pest management coordinator, and it should be funded by the departments who use pesticides, which is going to be a minimal point of the budget. I mean,
So
well, I mean, that's one way of doing it, but yeah.
Certainly something we should remember for budget season. Because this currently is coming out of our budget. It comes out of the DOL budget.
Actually, in truth, it should be in the miscellaneous budget. It's something that either the county government is going to do or not do.
Right.
And so, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, to figure out that there are three cost centers that do this and no more than three, let's take a look at what we're dealing with here. It's a very minimal expense. It's necessary. It should go into the miscellaneous budget as part of the spending plan.
How come it hasn't been in the past? How come it was
because there have been great debates down here about amounts that should be jettisoned because they're unnecessary, and the people who felt that they were unnecessary would win until a few years ago when we were able to at least get in some enough money for a part-time position.
Yeah, well, the problem that I saw when I first got on the board is we were budgeting this money but not spending it on anything, and now we finally spent it on the right.
Well, yeah, we were budgeting the money, but we weren't spending it because $40,000 was an insufficient amount to attract an administrator to do this. So we would have very easily spent the money had it been an appropriate sum for the position.
Now, I just want to say for the record, you know, we wonder why we need someone to deal with pesticides. From my personal experience, I spent a dozen years on the board of the foundation researching and funding the reduction in hazards to pesticides. And the hazards posed to the environment and human health from the toxicity of pesticides is great. And it's widely documented, and the body of knowledge is growing. When it gets in the water supply, it cannot be broken down. The endocrine disruptions, the carcinogens, the dangers and the risk to the people who apply it are great. So, I think this is really a public safety and health issue. It's about the health of our workers, the people using our facilities. We need to get that out on the record. And Bill, thank you for your leadership and Legislator Avenanti, who was also instrumental in steering us.
I have some other questions about this law that we were discussing. We've been focusing on the role of the committee with respect to county property. And when you look at this law, there's 22 functions that have been given to the county. And some of them have to do with beyond the county property, 4 and 5. Pages 4 and 5. Pages number 4, develop programs for evaluating and monitoring pest problems in the county. It seems to be broader. 6, 7, offer assistance to citizens with pest or other related problems. 8, work with and invite active citizen participation in monitoring pest programs. And number 13, develop, distribute, and conduct outreach and educational programs. And my question is, those are all nice things, but is it fair to impose those on you?
It's impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it's possible. And you can summarize that. You could say act as a resource for county residents, and that gives you a broad range of things. I mean, we do things. We used to have a no pesticides day where we handed out flyers at the household hazardous cleanup days. Signs on the golf courses, advising the golfers about the stuff. We put out a brochure at one point before that became, brochures became extinct. So we have done a large part of educating the public. But I think all that, and Kelly, that could just be lumped into one sentence, like be a resource for county residents or something like that. And that gives you, plenty of wiggle room.
Well, should we do, to John's point and your point, Should we do just an offline work session sometime and go through these point by point and say, look, these are the top eight things we're doing. We spend 90% of our time on them. This is what the crux of the law is. And then, you know, we'll look at the other language.
Yeah, I just think something that would carry.
You know, that could, that, you know, might even be a good,
paragraphs of stuff.
You know, a good staff project, too. Chris and Betsy could work on that.
Is there anything in the exemptions or exceptions that need to be examined? These various exemptions here, is there anything that's changed?
Let's see.
This is for the local law, John?
Yeah, page 7 and 9.
If this will help with your evaluation of it. One of the things is that these exemption sections follow very closely with how you go about an exemption on the state level and the federal level. So they're pretty consistent with that. Those have not been amended significantly. So I think you're pretty much okay with these.
Right. And then 690.07, page 8-9, deal with the committee's ability to grant waivers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you're comfortable with those provisions there, Dennis and Roberta? They're adequate for your purposes, and they don't restrain you too much, or
no? Given that we have, you know, the great members on the committee that we have, and Kevin as a resource, as you know, as long as the Cornell Cooperative Extension agent continues to participate, and I mean, he's great in terms of technical expertise. He runs the county.
He's a member of your committee.
Oh yeah, he runs the county golf course seminar every year, which is wonderful.
Now, have their budget cuts impacted you at all?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, may I interrupt?
Yes, go ahead.
Except possibly the loss of Jody.
And that's where I was going with that, Kevin. And hopefully that we'll be able to retain Dr. Gangloff Coughlin, because the state has totally cut, the last I heard, the budget for community IPM at the state level, which she ran. So at which point we'll lose her. Terrible, terrible loss. But back to your point, I was just going to say, because of all this expertise we have on the committee and at our disposal, you know, we've been fine with this, but lacking that,
so
I'll
have
to get
sure
back
the committee
to you.
Is well staffed.
Well, appropriately staffed.
Appropriately staffed.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been well staffed for the past 2 years. We've been two or three short, but unfortunately, we've got, you know, really, really good expertise on the committee.
All right. Okay. I know. Let's go to my questions.
Good. All right. Members, any other questions, comments?
Good work, Kevin.
Okay, so.
All right, so
thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Roberta. We're going to let Betsy.
I think Kevin wanted to say something.
Oh, Kevin, do you want to add anything before we.
Yeah, I just have one thing, and I'm not sure how it would work. Two things, actually. One of them is regarding that aquatic permit thing that Chris is looking into. That's a definite. That law passed, and they're just. Right now, they're just giving us a little bit of time until I think February of next year. But regarding all of our mosquito applications, we're going to have to get special aquatic permits to do those. The county will. They're looking at that as a permittable application on a national level.
So even the little larvicides?
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, the larvicides
are
definitely
things that have access to waterways.
Wow.
Yep.
So would your committee then be responsible for that for the county?
Yeah.
All right, so Kevin, let's coordinate you and Chris, and we'll do a joint meeting on that. Because I know the municipalities are very interested in that, and as you point out, it's going to have county implications as well.
Definitely. The second thing that I don't know how this will work, but as far as people using less toxic products, that has been working. They're still using a couple things that we prefer them not to use. Somebody there was mentioning endocrine disruptors. And we do have a couple of people using some organophosphate pesticides through an exemption process, and we prefer them not to do it. And my only way that I can think of is to get them not to do it is that if there's some way, either through the law or through the workings of the county, if we don't allow an exception for a product, that they're not allowed to purchase it. If you could stop them from buying it, then they couldn't use it.
That's an excellent point. Thank you, Kevin. You're absolutely right. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, that's a real issue. Like, they still have stuff in storage that's not even allowed to be on the market now, and they shouldn't be allowed to use it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And Kevin, while you're on the line, it's actually fortuitous that we did this review right at this time, because Kevin's contract, I think, just expired. And it's in the ANC queue. We wanted to wait to have this review, but it's in the queue, so it's moving forward, Kevin.
Okay.
So we haven't forgot about you.
No, I didn't think you had. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So that's it on this law.
Okay. Thank you.
We have some work to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
The next one for Kelly is the hazardous waste point of sale notification law. And we have Consumer Affairs Director John Gatchone. John, you want to come up and join us, please?
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
I'm otherwise known as
the sealer.
Can I make a quick comment?
Yes.
Just as a member of legislation, right, while he's coming up, just can we, for the minutes, switch the agenda? This isn't other business. It's a joint meeting with Environment and Energy, and it says other business on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. It says, under call to order, it says jointly with the Committee on Environment and Energy.
All right, well, we've got two different meeting minute formats. All right.
Okay.
Thank
Kelly,
you.
The floor is yours again.
Sure, thank you, Chairman. So I'd like to just walk
I'm sorry.
You
through. Wait, Roberta, did you have a point before you?
I was just going to ask if I chaired the committee when this law was passed to...
Stay around.
Would you like me to stay
around?
Sure,
please.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I did have a comment.
Sure. Please. These are open meetings.
Thank you. My name is Ellen Meiter. I work for Grassroots Environmental Education. I've had the honor of serving on the
past member
management committee under Roberta Wiernick's leadership. And I commend the work that the pest management committee has been doing for all these years, working so hard. I also very much appreciate the work of the legislators in this process, and particularly Legislator Harkin for making those comments about the human health impacts. Grassroots has been working closely with the county on this issue and providing professional training for landscapers, commercial landscapers, and municipal and school groundskeepers in not just reduction of pesticides in lawn and turf care, but the actual exclusion of pesticides in maintaining properties using natural organic land care practices. And it's been very successful in Westchester County. It's been duplicated in Nassau and Suffolk County as well. But there are over 200 landscapers who have been trained to date in this process, and they're not using any pesticides in this particular program. And many of those landscapers have excluded these pesticides in their primary business and are not just using this as an add-on. I say all of this as a backdrop to the fact that this has been very successful, and not only successful in Westchester County, but has gained the attention of New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and they are beginning to launch an initiative which is going to greening your yards as a statewide initiative, excluding the use of pesticides and providing that professional opportunity for landscapers. Instead of it focusing on the pesticide application process, they're actually engaging professional educators, one of them being Chip Osborne, who's a national expert, to train lawn care professionals, municipal professionals, whoever they may be, in this process, and it be a statewide effort. In addition, as you may already know, may have stated earlier, I was not here at the outset, New York State just passed legislation banning the use of pesticides on all school playing fields in New York State, and that will go into effect July 2011. And I think these are critical issues, so in all the efforts that the PMC is making, I think these are not only attainable goals, but I think we could even push the envelope further, and many municipalities right here in Westchester County are actually caring for their parks and their ball fields and their properties without any pesticides at all, and they're using cultural practices and other strategies that do not any pesticides with you.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Unfortunately, we have a long agenda here. We've got three more to get to. I would love for you to come back to the Environment Committee, mm-hmm. and we can talk more about that.
Absolutely. I just want to make the statement and then the offer of sense.
You know what's interesting? I would suggest for the Environment Committee you do that, and then the flip side, which is the fertilizer law and what's happened with that over the last year and a half.
The state is about to pass the same phosphorus ban that we passed.
It'll be interesting to see how ours has worked over the last year, because that's kind of the flip side. The fertilizer part.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to get the landscapers in and hear their, you know, hear their take on it.
But call us, because I think we should continue this conversation.
Okay, now we go to the hazardous waste point of sale notification. And we turn it back over to Kelly.
Thank you, Chairman. So what I'd like to do, similar to how we started off with PMC, is just do a walkthrough of the law with you and let you know what it's all about.
Great.
This law was passed in the early 90s, and that was the last time it was visited. And the purpose was to really identify for Westchester County residents and consumers in Westchester when they were purchasing something that was potentially classified as hazardous. One of the big thrusts of this law was certainly to prevent Westchester County residents from putting anything into the stormwater system that could potentially be harmful. Certainly, hazardous waste have other health impacts besides environmental health, but we'll talk about that more later. We have our standard definition section, and then the hazard notification establishes that there would be certain signage requirements at the point of sale with certain language to inform the consumer of the dangers of improperly disposing. And that language is or was used on the flyer that the Department of Public Health made in response to this legislation.
Which was just handed out, right?
Yes, it looks, there's two flyers you're probably seeing. One is the Department of Consumer Protection's A List of Hazardous Household Products for Consumers. Mm-hmm. And it looks very similar, same fish being saved for the dispose of household chemicals property and protect Westchester's water. This sign, the square sign here, was the sign made directly in response to this regulation. Okay, and this was an please correct me if I'm wrong, this was educational materials that was
distributed with the sign to retailers.
Right, so these two went together. Now, what the regulations were formed as a result, the law asked for a committee to be formed that would put together regulations regarding the meat of this law, if you will. And the committee did meet. It did put together regulations. At this time, we had worked with a few people. We weren't able to nail down the exact regulations, but we feel that the materials gave us a good idea of what was intended. Going on to the next section, the enforcement is by the Westchester County Sealer of Weights and Measurements, and there is a penalties and offenses section in here where initial violations are treated with warnings and notices, and then if somebody is actually willful, they can get a $500 violation for each violation, and that's in section 692.06. It does have a preemption provision should New York State ever actually make something on point. At this time, we don't have any evidence that there is something on point to what this law was attempting to accomplish. A few things I would sort of like to point out through the meetings, through the information sessions I had with Chris and the work that Chris did coordinating with the commissioners and speaking with John. One of the things that is important here is especially the enforcement of it. There was never any fines that came out of the issuing of this law, first of all. Never happened. In the last 10 years, so really since the inception of this law, a total of 52 violations were given out. But it means just that. It was literally a warning that there was something going on. And meanwhile, the warning was where the process ended. And I want to make clear with those 52 violations, it's not necessarily that all the retailers in Westchester County are saints about complying with this law, although I hope that they are, but that it really hasn't been enforced for quite some time as the efforts of the departments have been taken in other directions. One of the other things with this notification is it's really meant to educate the consumer, to tell the consumer you are purchasing something that is hazardous. And the question is that because it's really not being enforced as it was intended. Where are those signs going up? I think about Home Depot, for example. Are you going to have it at the point of product where the, you know, the paint thinner is being sold, or do you have it as a mass poster at checkout or by the information booth where no one really sees it? A few other things that I think are relevant to really looking at this law is that since this law was enacted, one of the wonderful things that has come out of the county in terms of the Department of Environmental Facilities is that they have done a lot of education that targets the same ideas that was intended originally by this law. So one thing is that are we being duplicitous here? One of the things that I appreciate about the current DEF literature in conjunction with what came out of this law is that it also emphasizes the element of human health. One thing that a lot of people aren't aware of and I found very interesting is that certain pharmaceuticals, and I shared this with you, Charminona, but certain pharmaceuticals have been listed by the EPA as hazardous waste. Common medications, prescription medications like nitroglycerin, Coumadin, for example. And certainly we're not, this law was never designed to go up in pharmacies, but is it really doing what it was intended, I guess, is the big thing that we kept coming back to. Another thing you should also be aware of is that FTC has made stronger labeling requirements for household hazardous waste since this was initially passed. So the actual label on the container does a great deal of informing not only of the environmental health risks that this law accomplishes, but also talks about the human health risks of improper disposal with like CFL light bulbs and things like that. In terms of waste disposal, there is in the waste regs under the ECL, there are exemptions for myself as an individual putting something like a CFL light bulb in my kitchen trash and it going out with the hauler. I won't get in trouble for that necessarily by the law as it's written. However, the waste hauler, if the DEP officers come and do a check of the waste hauler carriage and opens the bags and finds CFL bulbs all over the place, now the waste hauler can be fined and can receive penalties for hazardous waste in that waste haul. But the actual consumer isn't held accountable for that under the ECL at this time. So again, a few things to think about are the penalty section. If we're not really enforcing it, so we're not really getting to penalties, and to actually be able to prove a willful violation by a retailer, kind of hard. Are the other efforts being done by the county and being done by the government the federal government in terms of labeling, are those more than sufficiently accomplishing what we had hoped with this law? I think that the county was ahead of its time when it came up with this law. It was doing something almost preemptive to the other efforts around it. And at this moment in time, in 2010, a lot of the other players have caught up, not directly in the most on-point way, but in a lot of significant ways. So is this kind of just sitting here and not really adding anything to the mix?
Roberta?
She's right on. The law was never really enforced. First, for starters, the whole controversy of, is it point-of-sale notification? And you went in stores when you could find them, a little sign, half the size of what the committee designed, by the way. We designed a big 8x10 that people could actually see when they came down the aisle. It shrank down to like this. And you might find one posted at the cash register. Too late, everybody's got it in their shopping cart, checking out. You know, I mean, it was totally backwards from the beginning. Very little education out there on it. Never saw anything in the stores on it. Most stores didn't have it posted. The whole idea was to put it in the aisles when the people are considering whether or not to purchase it. That was the whole point of the law. Never happened.
The other thing I would say, just tailing off of that, is, and my understanding, John, is that there are other requirements on retailers in terms of signage. So it's not like this is the only thing retailers are required to post, but they do have signage requirements that are being enforced and are being overseen by consumer protection. It's just this one in particular not meeting the mark.
I just wanted to comment on a couple of the points made. It has always been policy direction we were given, and this, the body of knowledge with this legislation has left the department. A lot of the people that were there when it was put together and formulated are no longer with the department. our direction has always been to put the sign at the point of sale. Any new retailer that opens, we provide them with the information. You know, do we get back to everyone to see if they posted it? Honestly, no. You have to understand with legislation like this and the way it was written, you mentioned the penalties. We have to go back three times before we can start to make the argument that someone willfully didn't post it. Not once, not twice. So in this era of budgets and resources and new legislation given to the department over the years, pool sign notification, and we're also looking at, you know, other things we do, as was mentioned, refund policy. That's been a stalwart of the department for years and years. Those types of things. So, you know, for me to send somebody back three times to see if the sign is posted, we have to make a judgment. You know, is that, you know, as cost effective as we could versus we were doing responding to someone's complaint or actively enforcing the home improvement law. So those were the kinds of considerations. The direction we were given a few years back was not to go out there and actively pursue this because it involves three trips.
It's actually built into the, the lack of enforcement is built into the law.
Right.
It says the first two times there'll be warnings.
Yeah.
So it forces you to go back.
The other comment or point I'd like to make is you're talking about majority of retailers in the county that sell some type of cleaning product or bleach or something like that that's on that list. You're talking about the drug chains. You're talking about the major department stores. You're talking about dollar stores. So you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of retailers, some of whom we don't normally go into every year because they may not have a weighing and measuring device, which we have to go into those retailers because of state mandates. So it's, you know, the number of retailers involved is substantial.
Excuse me, I may be mistaken, or it's been a while since we did this. But I understood that it was only to be in stores where you went, because otherwise it couldn't be enforced. Am I
The direction
here?
We were given, and again, a lot of the body of knowledge has left the department, is no longer with the department. It was always my understanding that those stores that sold these products needed these signs.
That's an issue. Retail establishments are very broad. All sales outlets, stores, shops, or other places of business located within the county in which Westchester was operated to sell or convey household products.
Right, but in terms of enforcement,
they sell the cleaning products. So.
Enforcement?
I think in terms of enforcement, it was, I don't know, understood, at least discussed, that the only place it would be or could possibly be enforced would be any place that had weights and measures, because that would be the only place consumer protection would be going.
Now, John, you say you still send out the information.
If we're contacted by
retailers,
that's someone that's new into the county, and generally what happens is the larger retailers will contact us. We're coming to the county. What's your local regulations like consumer protection? We would touch the refund policy. We would touch these, clines. We have the pool signs. Whatever other legislation, would be required by that retailer, depending on what they sell.
You know, I guess I'm just thinking out loud, you know, having reviewed as a member of the legislation committee, I'm not speaking as environment committee here, but both, certainly some statutes we looked at were no longer enforceable or they had been preempted, and, you know, it just made sense to get them off the books. I'm just thinking out loud. Obviously, this sounds unenforceable, but on the other hand, there's an education component here, and I don't know, again, thinking out loud, is there a way we can revise this to take advantage of the education component, but that we don't have a statute that's unenforceable, because, you know, we don't want you spinning your wheels and not being able to accomplish a mission.
Let me just go through the other parts of the statute that I have a problem with as far as enforceability. Just go back to hazard notification, 692.03. That requires that the Commissioner of Health designate in writing, after at least one public hearing, a household chemical product that, if improperly disposed of, would create a health hazard, would be harmful to the public. I don't know if the Commissioner of Health is doing that or has done that.
I couldn't comment on that.
We don't even know that. So, A, you don't even get to the sign until you have these list of products. And two, all the sign says, if you look at the bottom of 692.03A, is you know, improper disposal of chemical products may cause contamination of air quality, drinking water, blah, blah, blah. A list of these products is available from the store manual. What consumer is going to take the time to say, I want your list? I just think it's impractical to think that anybody's going to do that. And then we don't even know if the Commissioner of Health has designated any products. And then the next section deals with the committee membership, which the committee did its work, that's fine, and now they're disbanded. And then you get to this enforcement provision that says two warnings. So I don't think this law, as it's currently written, is really doing anything that's valuable. I mean, I think education is important, and to the extent that there are federal and state laws that require labeling, that helps. But I'm just not sure this is doing anything worthwhile.
I do think that, and I don't have a report to show it to you. I believe the health commissioner was involved when the committee first was met. And Roberta, since you were on that committee, you might remember. Do you know if there was a report by the committee saying these are the materials that we suggest go on this brochure?
Absolutely, with sample signage, size that we even... There was a representative from the grocery industry on the committee, okay? Yeah. And we went this way over the signage because she kept saying, and rightly so, how limited their space is and how what the requirements are for, you know, from the signage and everything that they have to do from everybody. So we worked on...
Was there a public hearing? Do you remember?
No, there was a public hearing for the law.
The signage. The public hearing is to decide what products are going to go on this list.
That had already happened.
And my sense is that this list has been maybe revised in the last 10
you
years.
You have the list.
Yes, that's this other. That's the list of household. No, it's the other page. A list of household consumer products, and it has a list of various cleansers, automotive products.
So you think the Commissioner of Health created this list and had a public hearing?
I couldn't get confirmation of that. I tried.
I don't know that there was a public hearing over the items included. And this is like a third version of this, by the way. This is not the initial brochure.
I have an older version.
Yeah. I don't remember a hearing over the list of products. The hearing was just to pass the law, and then the committee went to work implementing, you know, the signage and everything that we were supposed to.
There would have to be a hearing to pass the law.
Yeah, that would.
But this section 692.03A seems to require a separate hearing. It says any retail establishment located and or doing business within the county of Westchester, which offers for retail sale household chemical products, formally designated in writing after at least one public hearing by the commissioner, upon and with the advice of the advisory committee, is harmful to the public if improperly disposed of, shall be required to post or provide reasonable and appropriate notification. So it looks like there has to be a hearing on this list.
Okay. I didn't remember the hearing. We just put together the list.
Held by who holds the list?
Is it the Board of Health?
Is it the Board of Health or is it Consumer Protection?
We are strictly on the sign part of it.
So it's they enforce the sign, but this list that the management is supposed to have available is the Department of Health list, I assume. Mm-hmm. So how does the management know unless they get that list? You know, who sends them the list?
When we distribute the signs, this list in brochure form, and I think it's really front and back with this. Sort of goes like
but
this.
As Kelly pointed out earlier, there's probably other things that should be on this list.
This was what is distributed or was distributed.
I think another point that's worth mentioning is that the one part that I don't think anyone would like to see lost from this law or the real emphasis was to educate the consumer about the dangers of household hazardous waste, to not take for granted if you're buying it at Stop and Shop that or at CVS that it could be potentially hazardous and that it needs to be dealt with carefully. And one of the things, and you know, Chris was able to obtain this from DEF, and I just have the one copy, but I'll show you, is that even in talking about the household recycling days and the materials that they take and things like that, so I think there is room or there's possibilities in the efforts of like DEF and other areas because, like I said, as it's sort of working right now, this is sort of it's disjointed and it's not accomplishing its goal. I don't think that many consumers are being educated, unfortunately, by its current setup, but I do think that there are mechanisms in place so that we can effectuate that goal of keeping the Westchester consumers informed, which is really what we want.
Yeah, Yeah, I just don't think this sign does it.
No, I mean, it doesn't say anything.
Because you have to go to
I have to go to the guy at the counter and say...
Who's going to take the time to do that?
No one.
Yeah, but next time I go to a store, I'm going to ask for their list of... and see what they say.
So, Roberta, what is your feeling about this? Modify, tinker, kill? I mean, as someone who helped formulate this and has the macro goal of, you know, really the goal fits into your purview of reducing toxins in our environment.
Unfortunately, I wasn't aware we were going to be doing this law, so I didn't review it, and the details, it's been almost 20 years.
You don't have to make any decisions today.
But what has been said here, obviously a lot of it, you know, can be done away with, can be done better. And I totally agree with Kelly that the most important part is education. Now, how do you make that effective? You know, what is the best way to do that? And does it require a penalty for the stores to comply? Why can't you just make, I don't know. You know, you all would answer that better than I.
Or is the better way to educate the public, maybe not in our hands, but in whoever regulates what goes on the labels and what goes on, you know, on these products that they take home. It's right there, you know, how to dispose of this particular product.
Well, I'll go back to
the
label.
It
might
not
be.
I will just go back to the point I made initially. And I think to be truly effective, the signage has to be posted in the aisle where the products are. And it shouldn't be that big a deal to put a little 6x8 or 5x7 sign. You know, if you've got an aisle labeled, you know, pesticides or motor products, you just put a sign at the beginning of the aisle or up on the top shelf somewhere. I think it can just be done better, more effectively. At the cash register, has never cut it.
Can I make a suggestion? Because I agree with you. There's some things that just clearly don't work about this.
Yeah.
But we all agree, I think, on the goal. Can I suggest we refer this back to Roberta's committee for some recommendations on how to make it better and maybe come back to us in 2 months or so?
But is this really, this is more than just a pesticide?
Yeah, it's really,
this was
it's really not
this
our
is
committee.
Another committee is yeah. Maybe
well, it's probably environment. It's probably. Was it Tom who did this?
It came through the Environment Committee ultimately, yeah.
Well,
I think they were
a long time ago.
Yeah. So it's enacted in 1994, and then it was amended in 1998. I have an old New York Times article here from 1997 mentioning Roberta as the chair, made up of business representatives, county officials, environmentalists. I don't think the committee's met in, 10 years?
Oh, no, we were disbanded.
They did.
So as soon as,
under the law, once they did their regulations and... you know, then it says the advisory committee shall be disbanded upon promulgation and issuance of regulations by the commission. Right. So, I guess, so we assume the commissioner has issued regulations.
I'm not aware of any. I did inquire.
They're not aware of any either?
They don't have any regulations. I'm pretty sure they don't.
Who?
The health board or the yeah.
Regarding
the lost them. I'm sure they had them at one point.
Well, it would be in this. Well,
would
be no,
I guess it wouldn't be in the Senator. Why not? I don't know. Unless they have regulations outside of the Senator code? Because that deals with wastewater treatment, mm-hmm. right? So we might not be in the.
Well, it sounds like we've got to get the health
department. Through the chair, what is interesting is that we've been through this signage issue with regards to uniform pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And the disinclination, especially in the larger box type stores, which I would assume are responsible for a great deal of the marketing of this, or the actual sales of these products, that they really are moving away from having signage. I mean, they really want to utilize the UPC in the little scanner and all of that.
They're, my understanding, and I can't speak for the retailers, is they like to see as much as possible on the label because they don't have to.
In which case, this would be
a manufacturer's requirement. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I think that's, it may not be done, but ultimately, that's the best way to inform people. It's right there.
Federal requirement. And it is done more than it was when this law was passed. It is done, I mean, I did look into that as a part of reviewing this. It's definitely done more.
And a lot of consumer groups are really wary of labeling because some corporations don't want certain information.
So they can mislabel.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know that we can necessarily totally trust that either.
No.
Well, should we keep working on the health department to see what they've done on this?
Bring them in, let's bring them in.
Okay, so we'll continue to have this discussion.
I have to say, as a member of the Board of Health, I have never seen any kind of fines or penalties for anything.
No.
And then we go through this monthly, and it's...
No, I think John has pointed that out.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. They have to go out at least three times.
And I think we also have to factor in that this was before the household chemical collections were really up and running full force.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that has helped a lot in terms of education and awareness.
Right.
Yeah, also, yeah, that list is a very generic list, too.
See, I think this might be DEF more than frankly.
More?
Because the idea is to keep it out of our stormwater and out of our storm sewers.
Well, that and that's
I have a big unincorporated area in Austin. We had about six storm breaks were notorious for changing your oil. People would go there, they would park, they would pull the plug, they would plug it back up, pump the oil, drop the oil down there, and they'd go. And we'd arrest people for the violating the law. But you really could almost put a car out there, a police car out, just doing a circle looking for these things. But, aren't we better off doing what we did with phosphorus in the fertilizer, which is...
You want all of these sold behind the counter?
Well, I would think we probably have to prioritize something, but I mean, how else are you going to get at it if you're serious? Can the industry be asked?
Shoe polish. I
withdraw the original broad-based vote. But what about reforming? I mean, are there moves
polish
to get the industry to formulate?
Give me the OPI color.
Formulate some of the products they're selling with them to make them less likely to make it on the list.
Well, there are so many products that have some trace of toxicity in them. You couldn't begin to control them that way.
I personally think it's better to see the
education.
The education, and I personally love the stenciling that's gone on.
Yeah.
On all, maybe you don't have them on your side of the county, but on our side of the county, you know, don't, whatever it says, don't dump. It goes out to the Long Island Sound. You don't have
any stencil them where? Near those
storm drains? Storm
yeah.
Drains.
Oh, yeah. No, we never heard of such a thing.
Oh, it's great. And it's right next to the color that indicates whether the larvicide's been thrown
right
in yet.
What year.
And, although we'll need permitting for that.
Yeah. That is my point. I always think
okay.
And it's something to look at when you're walking.
So this one we need to maybe
read
the health department and see what they've done.
This one needs
to be done. I really think we have to
Yeah.
Let's put an overhaul.
Okay.
That last one, hang in there, guys. This is an important one, too. Critical environmental areas. What's your state, Roberta?
What is it? You're tempting me.
This has to do with a law we created that designates critical environmental areas, and it was done way back in 1989. So it's 21 years old. And the question is...
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. Thanks for coming, as usual.
Okay, so why don't we just do a quick walkthrough?
Yep, same as before.
Sure.
That's great.
This law, just to give you the background, was enacted in response to the first passage of SEQR, State Environmental Quality Review Act. And if you look at the language of SEQR, it gives municipalities, governmental bodies underneath the state, to designate areas that are critical environmental areas so that they will require more thought during the environmental assessment process. So that's really where this came from in terms of that. So the law, it's pretty straightforward as it is on paper, is that the law delineates very specifically exactly where in the county the critical environmental areas are. And we have the map here that Chris is getting ready to put up. And not only does it, we have this map that was generated by the planning department, the law then lists in points A through O every single spot within that will be identified on that map. It also makes reference to the Department of Planning's major open space map with reference to its watershed properties. And I mean, that's really the biggest, the big gist of it. So you would, ostensibly it would seem like this is no harm, no foul. But the one thing I would say that you might want to notice is that there is absolutely no amendment provisions here. And that's somewhat problematic because after this law was passed, SEAKER was amended.
Right.
So now we have ambiguities between what it means to be a critical environmental area, what that triggers, what responsibility does a lead agency that's not the county, what do they have to do? So we, like I said, this law as it's written is okay except for the fact that we can't amend it. We can't even say incorporate by reference the most recent version of the open spaces map, and the open spaces map has been amended since then. So we're kind of in a quagmire, if you will, because SEAKER's changed since this law was passed, and now, like I said, a lot of little questions came up. For example, Chris and I were saying right prior to the start of this meeting, so if a CEA is implicated and the county is an interested agency, not the lead agency, does that mean that the lead agency must declare it type one, must do an environmental assessment? Because the law is not clear on this. So while, again, ostensibly all this law was meant to do was to delineate the critical environmental areas, with the evolution of SEAKER, we sort of need to evolve this law to meet it at its current place and time.
And do we want to add to the number of areas? Is that an issue?
Well, the problem right now is we really couldn't. I mean, because we don't have any amendment provisions. So, in fact, what we've done is said that A through O are all the critical environmental areas, period. So again, even a simple sentence like Westchester critical, as you know, incorporated by reference the most recent edition, and then you go through your process of that, and SEAKER outlines a process, as an aside, for how you designate CEAs in your region. So they have a pretty process, and so if you change the law with a slight little verbiage, you could make it be, you can make it so that it can grow. Right now it can't. Another interesting thing is that sort of came up in our looking at this law is that one of the things that is considered a type 1 action is non-agricultural activities in agricultural spaces, which are shown on the open space map that Chris has got going up here. Now, here's one thing that we both found kind of interesting, is that since the law was passed in 1989, the agricultural spaces, because of other legislation that's gone on in the state and the county, has grown significantly. So that does impact SEAKER. So I bring that up not to confuse you, although I can see how it might be confusing, but because as SEAKER has evolved and our maps have evolved, there's a disconnect now. So that's what we really need to revisit with this law, is to make our thinking in terms of the CEAs sync with the current understanding of the SEAKER legislation. And that's really that.
Question for you. Then how would you recommend updating this law to accomplish that goal?
Well, I think one thing that has to be done just straight off the bat is that there has to be more continuity between what the county, Westchester County, is identifying as a CEA. Because if you're making reference to maps but those maps have been updated, but then we have the specific list, there's a disconnect. So I think that the simplest way to identify what your CEAs are to just say something such as I lost my thought, but what something that you would want to do would be that anything that's designated, incorporate by reference the most current version of the Department of Planning's 2000 open space map, and then that becomes part and parcel with the CEA map underneath it. The other thing I would say is that SEAKER itself, this is a thing that Chris had pointed out, but the way that this law is written right now is that it's really focusing on type 1 actions. The way the law currently reads right now is that, and I have a little snippet of it here, if you'll just bear with me for the second, I'll grab it, but that what SEAKER sort of says right now is that if an area has been designated as a CEA, the potential impact of any type 1 or unlisted action on the environmental characteristics of this EA is a relevant area of environmental concern and must be evaluated in the determination of significance. So as you know, part of SEAKER is that you have to determine, is it a neg, dec, or POSDEC?
Right.
And the problem with the way the law is written now is that it's focusing on only that CEAs trigger type 1 actions, but that's not really how the law works. Just because a CEA might be implicated, it's not necessarily by default type 1. And so one of the ways that we might want to write it is, you know, just consistent with the SEAKER guidelines, anywhere in the county when a CEA is involved, it will be considered as part of the determination of significance, just to sort of mimic that language, if you will, to make it more in sync with how SEAKER has developed. Because, again, as you know, the type 1 and type 2 and lists in SEAKER are not exhaustive. They're illustrative. So the county does have the power to say, if you're building within 500 feet of this precious turtle habitat, it becomes a type 1 action, or it becomes something worth considering in your significance. So
the bottom line, what this law does is take these critical environment areas and say, if anything's going to be done in them, it's deemed a type 1 action. No
matter what. Which doesn't work based on the way SEAKER is currently written. And that's something really for the law. I mean, it needs to really go to, as Chris had said, to the law department there. Yeah. I mean, I think that the law has changed since the county passed this law, and there's ambiguities that certainly, with only 2 years of law school under my belt, I can't possibly begin to reconcile.
Should we refer this to the county attorney's?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think so. That's a great idea. But these are great points you made. Really good job on this one. This was
sticky.
So I'm going to send your memo down to the county attorney's office and have them really dig into this. So, any other questions for Kelly? I think I want to ask
Thank
everybody
you.
To give her a hand for like the other interns, this was volunteer work. For the next set of interns, we're trying to get credit. We're trying to get credit, but you guys worked for no credit, putting a lot of time, and we really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. It was a very rewarding experience, and thank you for taking the time with me today, all of you. I appreciate
Come back,
it.
Please.
Thanks for your presentation. Very, very well done.
Yeah, you got another year out of it, right?
Yeah. Also, for the record, would like to thank Chris Crane as well.
Yes,
absolutely.
There's really no other business for environment and energy. Any new business? Any old business?
I have some new. I don't know if it will. Well, I'll ask you. Did the deer stuff come through here? It did, didn't it? Through the environment committee?
We had a deer meeting a while ago, and they said that they were.
I'm getting calls for coyote.
I wonder why.
All right, you know what? We'll do
it. Basically saying what happens when the coyote goes over county property. Is that regarded pest notification?
All right, you know what? I've had some state experience with coyotes too. Chris, let's add this as an added starter for our next meeting. We'll add it as part of. And Judy, you and I can speak privately. Tell me more about what your constituents are looking for. Mm-hmm. And then Chris and I will figure out a way to get some info.
We need coyote posses.
Well, I think we need coyote notification. Like no coyotes allowed.
Widely signed. So do we have a motion to close the environment?
You have to do it in coyote language.
John, is that a motion to close environment?
It sure is.
From legislator Tessa. Judy, is that a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. The legislation has a few things.
Right.
We'll leave you to that.
Three resolutions. We have three appointments.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Subcommittee on appointments has met and found three really good applicants. Ross Campbell for the Fire Advisory Board. Mr. Campbell is a veteran volunteer firefighter, a resident, or he works in Legislator Testa's district. Legislator Testa, I think, gave about as glowing a report as you can get, and we recommend that. Second appointment is for Jerry Ruderman, who to go on the County Human Rights Commission, and we could think of nothing but glowing things to say about him, and we recommend him The third person is Alita Federico to go on the Westchester
Ali Federico.
Alida?
Alita Federico.
Oh, I said Federico. Federico. Who blew us all away, and we recommend her for appointment as well.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. We have one set of minutes. Minutes for
June. So moved.
June 12th for last week.
I wasn't.
Can we see my files, please?
Yeah, well, all in favor of the minutes?
Aye.
And what are we receiving in filing?
There's a few appointments that we already did, but then require action by the committee, so they're on.
Oh, okay. So do I have a motion to receive and file?
So
items 5, 6, 7, and 8. Is there a second? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None.
We have appointments today?
Yes.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Yep.
Thank you, everyone.
So motion opposed. Oh,
second.
Second.
I think we've done it.
All right.
So, do it again.
Been there, done that. Thanks.
This
John,
is great. This
I
is
have
really
a card for you. I the Somers downtown the other night, I sat with a guy from Fordham Law School who does a lot with their in programs.
Right.